I've always been interested in aircraft, perhaps old style aircraft with propellers rather than jets, because they look so beautiful and they have a form through function. I've bought so many books. I have a very extensive library on various planes and how they're made and how they look and the different colours they were. A lot of them, I suppose, are war planes because, necessity being the mother of invention, they most miraculous changes in their shape and their form was made during the war, so you get the most beautiful shapes and types of planes. My father used to make model planes when I was a child, and so I think I probably followed through from that afterwards. And have always, as I say, have books. I used to make models. I still do make models now, but I regularly go to air shows just to look at the planes and hear the sounds of them. If I'm at work and I hear a plane fly past, then I'll rush outside to have a look at it, even though it might just be a boring one. But it's any mention of planes with anything, I'll stop what I'm doing and talk to people about it. I got in trouble at work the other day from talking to a passerby who happened to notice I was wearing a Spitfire t-shirt and wanted to talk to me about it, and got in trouble with the boss because instead of doing my work I couldn't miss the opportunity of talking to this old boy, because there are very few people around
I suppose
now
the first
who
know
so
golf.
Much about them anymore. It's an old pastime.
Actually,
most people are into
true. I started
cars
off by making
or
models,
magazines or
model airplanes and model boats.
We'll leave that behind.
Probably from the age of 10. And I continued doing that until probably 10 or 15 years ago. But then I moved into playing golf, which involved collecting golf clubs, playing golf, having golf lessons, meeting people. And this went on and on and on and on and on and on, concurrently with motorbikes. As a learner, restoring the first motorbike, first moped, passing my test, motorbikes and sidecars. And that ultimately led me to the motorcycle business. So my hobby turned into a business. But all the time I was still playing golf, still making model aeroplanes and collecting cameras. And then later in life, I started playing the drums in 1986. And playing the drums led to playing in a band, making records, doing gigs, meeting more people. And still, at the time, I'm still motorcycling, making model aeroplanes. And then I've always had an interest in photography, going back to probably the mid-1960s, collecting cameras, processing, enlargements.
My main interest, I suppose, is collecting and hobbies is James Bond. I've got every single James Bond book in original and in second hand.
And built up a massive collection of about 50 cameras.
I've got all the films on video. I collect the soundtracks as well. I listen to the James Bond soundtracks while I work. I feel
the West End, North London.
Puts me in a sort of mood when I'm working.
Junk shops, stalls.
It's quite strange. Sometimes I reread the books a couple of times a month. I must have read each of them about 5 or 10 times. But it sounds
a hobby anymore.
Ridiculous, really.
But the main hobby is motorcycling. Has turned into me.
In many ways, perhaps I think I was born too late. I love the genre, the generation and the time.
Riding on the road.
These things were written. It's that sort of post-war.
Bikes.
I imagine it all in black and white, yet of course it was all in colour. But I read them, and when I listen to the music, it emotes the not only the frames from the film when it was shot, but also it's very evocative of that style of smartly dressed people being well-mannered and polite,
and that's
but at the
basically
same time
the whole spectrum of my hobbies.
Not necessarily
one
violent, but
making
active
a living,
and
the others
run
concurrently, apart from making model aeroplanes.
Corny action-packed here.
But the making of the model aeroplanes taught me an awful lot.
Yeah,
it taught me how to make things, how to make things from nothing rather than buying a completed product. I would make something from nothing, and I still use that technology that I picked up as a child 30 years later, making things out of nothing, out of scrap, modifying them and putting them to some sort of use. And that's the basic spectrum of my hobbies. Some of the motorcycle aspect of it was also to do with model aeroplanes. And similarly with the golf, I can recall playing golf as a teenager on Blackheath, just practicing. At the same time, you'd see somebody flying a model aeroplane who I knew, and you'd get involved with them, and some of the people involved in model aeroplanes were involved in motorcycling and then went on to play golf. So it becomes a whole, you know, your whole life revolves around your hobbies, really. Otherwise, you never meet anybody. You never seem to do anything.
I don't actually have any hobbies, I don't think. I mean, I had hobbies as a kid, I think, as most young boys do, which I think were inherited in a sense from my father and his father. Both of them collected stamps, and for a while I did as well. But I think when I got to about 12 to 14, it all seemed rather pointless. And it also, I mean, I don't know whether I was really conscious of this at the time, but it felt very bourgeois. And somehow I think it was because I never sort of really reacted violently to my parents as a lot of kids do. I was never really rebellious in this sort of an overt way, but I think sort of stopping doing things like that was part of my silent protest at my surroundings. And certainly at the time I was reading stuff that made me think about why was I doing these sorts of things, and things, writings by the sort of Situationists and Sartre and things like that made me, I guess, react to where I was living, which is very, very right wing. And everybody, I mean, all the friends of the family that I knew seemed to have these sorts of hobbies, even if it was like our next door neighbour who was obsessively redecorating his house every year, which seemed like a hobby rather than just having any practical function, because it just didn't, you know, it wasn't something that needed doing. And
I started collecting records of soundtracks of films to play while I was on my own or when I was at work. And I met a couple of people
who told me that
the ones I had were quite rare. And so I thought, oh, I better make sure I finish my collection before they go up in price too much. So I went around.
I didn't really see the point of having a hobby if you did something, you did it.
Carried on collecting and
having a hobby.
And so a friend came around and said, oh, it's a bit like sort of having a car without wheels or something.
It's something that.
I'd never collected them to do with the money. He did. He was always into
the outside
owning
world
things
in any,
because they were worth some money. I wanted them because it was an original record that maybe my mother or father might have played and people listened to of that generation.
Middle class,
and I had it. Everyone else was buying tapes and CDs and modern stuff, but I don't. I have them just because I can play them at work, and so I don't damage the vinyl. But I've got all. Although mostly, I suppose, out of all of them, I'm a Sean Connery fan more than any other. As far as the Bonds, as I say, when the books were written, he's a bit of a bastard, James Bond. Not that I particularly admire that, but he's quite ruthless. And Roger Moore and the other Bonds are fairly mild mannered. They're polite and they're tricky, but Sean Connery has got the look in his eyes, I think, possibly, or the stature that makes him a bit more ruthless. He's a nasty man in the books. His wife was killed by his enemies, and so he's very bitter and twisted. And although he acts like a gentleman, because he is an English gentleman, he's prepared to be ruthless and unforgiving if he has to be, I suppose. I admire that trait in a way. I'm not sure. I've never really thought too much about it. And from there, I carried on. I bought all the books when I was walking around car boot sales for the records. I saw the books. Again, in that wonderful, I think it's Penguin or Pan, who first published them, but lovely 50s-style paperbacks with 50s-style illustrations and photographs or computer.
Some of the hobbies I had when I was a kid were as a consequence of my father and
my
grandfather.
When the spy genre was first starting, so there was the James Bond
it's
books
a bit
and
sort
also
of like an inheritance,
Len Dighton,
I think,
with his Harry
like
Palmer books,
like,
and so I got into that because Michael Caine made the films of the Ed Crest.
And in a way, I think you do things like that to kind of get
of
sort of affirmation
well.
From certain people around you. It's a sort of
load of things that were
it's part of forming
to it.
Your forming your identity.
I have friends who work at Sotheby's and Christie's, and they phone me up whenever.
But certainly now I don't
an auction
have
that has any James Bond or spy bits in.
Occasionally, when
I never normally buy them because they're worth a lot of money, and people buy them because they're.
You know, in this little box
that
says hobbies, I just
odd jobs.
Always right in there.
Bowler hat was at Sotheby's.
I just I can't actually think of any hobbies that I have.
Or something.
I
mean, it's just for a bowler hat.
Part of
I would like it to have, not because I know it's worth something.
I'm trying to find the right words for this, but you know, to say that something is a hobby is kind of saying that it's pointless.
I thought it's gone on from there. People know that I like James Bond, so they sort of I get. On my birthday, I'll get posters from James Bond films so I can put them up in my room, or other things like spin-offs at the time, James Bond bow ties, or merchandise that was sold at the time, and at the time it was considered corny and not original.
And for a bit of fun.
But now it is so collectible as well, because it's these little pieces.
I've also got a massive collection of golf clubs
edition
from the 1830s onwards that are worth lots of money. But the people who I've met are interested in the golf clubs want my golf clubs because they've got portfolios of golf clubs and they collect them and they use them as investment, and I steer clear of them. They want to get their hands on the clubs I've got. But hobby-wise, I've never met anybody else who collects golf clubs. One particular man came to mind. The golf clubs were in a garage. Somebody saw them. Somebody else turned up at the garage and said, I'll give you an amount of money for them. Then another person turned up and said, I believe you've got so-and-so golf club. And he came to my house the next day and offered me an awful lot of money for one golf club. But I turned him down. And he had everything, this man. He had a large house in Surrey, a very successful business, a flash car. But he didn't have this particular golf club. I did. And he didn't like it. I couldn't afford proper golf clubs, so I used to go and buy them for pennies in junk shops. But it wasn't fashionable to collect golf clubs in those days, and I carried on right through the 1970s into the early 80s doing so. And it became fashionable in the 1980s to buy golf clubs as an investment, but I already had this portfolio of golf clubs going back 25 years. And I've met a few people who've just tried to turn me over. They make out their interest and say, I'll give you that much money. But in reality, those golf clubs could be worth 10 times more than that. Very difficult to pinpoint the value. So that's not really a hobby. It started off as a hobby, but it's now... I've got them. I put them to one side.
I mean, I remember my father collecting coins, collecting stamps, collecting medals particularly. It just struck me that the only reason he was collecting them was the way that they looked. And I think that's probably a particularly male thing, that sort of having your sort of little sort of imperial country in front of you, which is sort of represented by all these little objects. It really wasn't so much about what these objects were, although there was, you know, you could talk a bit about the history of a particular stamp or a medal, but I used to go with my father sometimes, you know, get sort of trail around with him while he went to these various shops. I remember coming down to London when he was looking for particular medals to sort of complete his collection, and standing in was it Sotheby's, I think, looking at these glass cabinets full of medals and thinking this is completely absurd. And then I think sort of one of the reasons I kind of reacted against it in that case of medals was it seemed rather the whole idea of having a medal is it has these sort of very militaristic connotations, which I didn't like anyway. But the fact that you were collecting other people's medals seemed even more of an absurdity, and trading them for sort of high prices. I mean, it's a very particular male thing. I think a lot of it is to do with control. If you don't really have much else going on in your life, I think a lot of men have to have something that they feel in control of, and
people would think that I've gone along that roller coaster of collecting an asset and investment, but I'm not. It was just for the benefit of having the clubs at the time. No, they're just there because I enjoy looking at them and owning them, because they're very old. Some of them are 150 years old. I've got some literature, and I've got pictures of people using those clubs in the 1850s and 1840s. So that in itself is very interesting.
But back to,
and it wasn't fashionable to collect. I got
the records first, and I collected the records, and then I got all of the books. And as I say, I was given loads of things for various birthdays, and some people called me James or silly Bond references at work. And to identify my tools, because I work as a sculptor, I work with a lot of other sculptors, and they all have very similar tools. So identifying my tools, some people put a black piece of tape round or stencil their initials, but I'll just put 007 on all of my stuff, so everybody knows anything with 007 is my tool. My credit card PIN numbers are 0007, because you have to have four numbers, because it's something I know I can easily remember. But
my father did introduce me to golf.
I'm thinking about it,
and we used to go to a golf club at Beckenham and hire golf clubs, and then I was in a junk shop in Blackheath and I noticed a few clubs for shillings, and I started buying them. And I just carried on, and I lived down in Canterbury in the early 1970s, and I put an advert in the local paper, golf clubs wanted, and all sorts of people phoned up with these golf clubs. I used to spend hours restoring them, years restoring them over a period of time, and they're all done now, they're all restored. And people just literally, they would almost throw them away. You know, they would live in lofts and things like that, get used for holding open garden sheds. But I managed to rescue them and restore them. But I've never met anybody else who restores them who has the interest that I did. They want the value of the club. They buy them for £2,000 with a view of selling them for £5,000 in 3 years' time. But I've never been interested in that. I could have actually sold one of these golf clubs for £5,000 to someone in Scotland. A friend of mine went to Scotland. He actually lives in St Andrews. He took three clubs with him to show to somebody. And this bloke looked at one of the golf clubs and said, well, that might be worth 5,000, depending what how old it is, it might be worth 2,000. I think it was worth about 10,000. He was trying to get hold of it. These golf clubs probably cost me 50p each 25 years ago, and he didn't like it.
I think I identify with.
I hadn't gone out to look for the clubs; they just come to me.
A lot of bereavements when I was young that did make me slightly not sheltered, I suppose, a bit bitter and withdrawn about things, and so. Reading the books and finding out about this man who'd had a hard life, but he was fighting back for good and being a decent fellow, even though he was sort of living in nasty places and dealing with nasty people. I suppose in a way I identified with that, and he's a bit of a loner, as am I. I try and get on with things and try to do the right things. I don't know if I aspire to be him, because I wouldn't like to do what he does. But maybe it's a man thing about having adventure, and I travel throughout the world for my job, so when I do, most people might think, oh, I'm going to a foreign country to do some work or whatever, but I sit in a plane and think about a certain chapter from a James Bond book where he's sitting in a plane and he meets someone at an airport. And now I suppose it's not so impressive, but in the 50s when not everybody flew, he was so special in the books because he flew to a foreign country and rented a car and smoked a pack of foreign cigarettes and went to a bar and ordered a martini and had all these very simple things, but they gave him a sort of identity. And everyone flies around the world all the time now. Everyone can afford to. I have to for my work, and my work will pay for me to fly to Geneva. And so I get on the plane to Geneva. I make sure I'm smartly dressed in case I meet anyone. And I'll go to the bar, and because I'm on expenses, rather than have a beer, I'll definitely have a martini or something. And then go from there to, you know, get a cab or go somewhere. But always I'm sort of in the back of my mind, it's remembering a chapter or something that went on in one of the James Bond stories.
Yeah.
I respect the character, died, someone who is polite and well-mannered. And treats people like they ought to be treated in a way, which is...
I think the thing I felt...
A lost
Well, I think it was something that we all felt, days, my mother, my sister, myself, was that a lot of money had been sort of salted away in these objects, quite a considerable amount of money. And particularly in my mother's case, she used to... A lot of the money that she earned went into this joint account, and it became apparent that, you know, a lot of the money that he'd been spending on these things was out of this account. And not that we were ever short of money in this, you know, on a fairly basic level. I mean, we were never rich, but just the idea of all this money wrapped up in these objects that, as soon as he died, seemed completely pointless. They may as well have been made out of chocolate with tin foil over them. It was only kind of when he was alive that these objects had a certain significance. That was his collection, and you were very kind of aware that, you know, there was a lot of value put onto these things. But when I got them, my reaction was, I don't actually want to have these things around. There's something that almost that they're sort of contaminated by something. So they were all sold very quickly, in the same way that people collect sort of military memorabilia. It just, there was something rather hollow and a bit sort of off colour about the whole thing. And the idea that, I mean, I think in some of these cases the medals were ones that had been awarded posthumously because of the little sort of the words on the back said so. Again, it made the whole activity seem seem a bit absurd, and the idea that people would get so excited about wanting a particular medal with particular bars on it and all of this sort of thing.
I did buttons. People used to give me clubs.
I think there's a tendency
to
get lost in this sort of minutiae of collecting these things.
Brass clocks and brassware.
Tiny differences between
these clocks
have
come up for £5 for 30 clubs, so you'd actually go and buy them.
More valuable or less valuable.
I just give them £5. And they went into the collection and I restored them. The restoring was actually more fun than using them. They were usable, but they could break. And to look at them was nice, but to look at the club and then restore it and then think how it looked before was really good fun. Same with the model aeroplanes, you see. You start off with a box of bits and you've got an end product. Same with the motorbike. You might go and buy a motorbike dismantled in a box, in a tea chest, and you build it into something. So it all grows from, as a child, the model aeroplanes, making something from nothing, and I still do it. So as a way, that did actually channel and control the whole of my life.
Yes.
I don't look for a hobby. I was going out shopping this afternoon,
and we passed by
just happens.
An antique shop.
But it all starts off with sort of
looking at an antique shop for something. I have no idea what she might be looking for, but I'll be looking for the same sort of lighter. If I see a Ronson lighter, I know that in Goldfinger he used a Ronson to light his cigarettes, and that's a special type of lighter that James Bond would have used. Or if we go up to London and we're walking through the Burlington Arcade, I know there's a cigarette shop at the end of the arcade that hand-makes cigarettes to your order. I've given up smoking now, but when I was smoking, if I was walking past, I'd always pop in and order a packet of cigarettes rolled with Turkish and domestic blend that would have three blue rings on the filter, because that's exactly what he ordered in the book. You never saw it in the film, but it was his little sort of foible in the book. And yet, yes, I swear, not as much as I used to, just because I have so much now, and I tend to be a bit more discerning in what I buy. I wouldn't just buy anything. When I walk past collector shops, or when I get a phone call from friends who work for the auctioneers, I'll say, this is on and this is on, and we've got this and this, and I'll probably ignore most of it, unless it's from one of my favourite films or my favourite books, and I think, oh, I'll have to look into that. A lot of the posters I still collect, because there were so many posters made for different countries. They were released in different formats, and the artwork on them is absolutely astounding. Again, it's pre-photography, pre-computers, so it's wonderfully hand-drawn illustrations of various scenes from the film amalgamated in, and you find James Bond will be doing something and walking on the ceiling while fending off helicopters and spaceships just with a single pistol, or with a special lighter that turns into
a human being,
atomic bomb,
something
to concentrate on other than their work or their
so
life.
If I see one that's very special,
as a hobby or a pastime, they can relax into and get away from the norm. And so when I'm reading a book or listening to the music, I'm relaxing. So people like to talk about racing cars or football teams. I don't like football. I don't follow any
amount of money each week that I haven't spent on anything,
and I can put it in the bank and save it, or next time I walk past something, then I might get it. It doesn't take over my life, but if you were to see the collection I have, if I ever got all of my James Bond bits out, it would be quite surprising to me, I think, if I ever
got my,
I don't think a little James Bond room or something, but
still affect you.
In my
30,
room, there's a whole shelf devoted to
it.
All of the posters are Bond posters or airplane posters, but most.
And it is the making Bond things.
As I say, when I work, I listen to James Bond music,
that,
even though I've
there's
heard
a table
each track
there,
hundreds,
which
and
is
hundreds
in fact
of times
from a junk shop, and underneath it, it's got somebody's name and the class they were in. But the leg was broken off it.
Strange sort of move.
So I just took that from a junk shop from a pound and manufactured another leg and fitted it to it. That type of thing. This bookcase is made out of floorboards, from scrap floorboards, basically. Part of that drum kit is fabricated from copper pipe, which is actually, see the thing the symbol's sitting on? Actually, that's manufactured from water pipe. Part of the symbol mechanism over there is made from plumbing fittings and scrap that's been lying around. There's another drum over there that came from... I was looking for cameras, actually, but I found that drum there, which has got animal skins on it in Cornwall for £8. Somebody gave me that symbol down in Cornwall. Once people realise that you like to... not get involved in the disposable society, they'll give you things because they feel guilty to throw something away. There are people I work with who know how I feel and they come and say, do you want this? Sometimes I don't, but I say thank you very much and go and dispose of it. Very often they're all recyclable stuff. So that in itself is a hobby.
Every time I go to an auction,
making something out of nothing,
I see the same people. Although I suppose I am in the same boat as them because they see me and I see them at the same auctions, but they go to every auction religiously and they'll come over to chat and say, oh, did you see this? There's this, or Ian Fleming's son is doing this, or something to do with James Bond. Did you see it? Or it's on at the weekend. But I've always been very wary or scared of them. I sort of look at them as not geeks, but as strange people who... They seem to be a bit more infatuated than I.
It just developed. I came from quite a wealthy background. My father was an army officer. There was no problem with money. We moved around a lot. And I suppose I used to get bored. My father was in Germany in the army, or Malaya, or Africa, and I was stuck with my mother. So I probably used to get bored. So I'd start making something. I'd make a model boat, a model airplane, something like that. I'd build a bicycle up out of spare parts. I just had to be doing something. I had to be creative. Some people are artistically creative, aren't they? They could paint a picture or something. I can't do that. But I could take a bit of scrap metal and make it into something useful. Without thinking about it, so I wouldn't actually look at part of that sofa bed and think, I'll make something out of it. But what I might do, I might be making something, and I'll think, I'll go and reuse that. There's something in the garden shed I've kept for a while. And so I suppose that is the hobby, making something from nothing.
If you're a conspiracy theorist, hobbies are a great way of controlling people. You know, there's nothing worse than having people who've got nothing better to do but think for themselves. If you can deflect them by inventing endless numbers of hobbies, then you've got a very passive population who aren't going to cause too much of a fuss. And I wouldn't say I was necessarily a conspiracy theorist, but when I read or find things along those lines and I think, well, yes, that's actually probably what's going on unconsciously, in the same way that sports and religion are great ways of nullifying people's, or blunting people's...
A lot of people, in my eyes, don't seem about to be able to focus on anything they want. They get told what to focus on. So a lot of people support football teams because they think they should, rather than because they want to, or they'll all talk about the latest car that somebody's selling. It all seems so meaningless and banal. But then maybe I'm the one to talk because I'm into a fictional character written in the 50s. So